Welcome back to Tantra Cafe. This is Laurie Handlers, and Tantra Cafe is a program for spiritual enlightenment. And I wish you all peace. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Have you ever stopped to think about what's happening in your brain during sex? Is sex just a physical thing to you? Is sex more of a mental thing? Like, in your experience, have you, and perhaps if you've ever happened to see the film What the Bleep, you know that the body is sending signals to the brain constantly and vice versa. My guest today is going to share something about the neurobiology of sacred sex. My guest is Susie Hoyman. She's studied, taught, written, and produced instructional videos on the subjects of the Kama Sutra, Tantra, and other spiritual disciplines and sexual disciplines since 1987. She currently runs the internet sites Tantra.com and Tantra.org, both founded in 1995. Susie has co-produced 3 instructional videos on Tantra and the Kama Sutra, and she's the author of 3 books, the Everything Great Sex book, the Everything Kama Sutra book, and the Rules of Love, the 64 Arts of the Kama Sutra. Susie's an amazing being who's got way, way more in her resume than I can even get into right now, but some of it we're going to get into as we speak. So, Susie, what does it all mean? What does this all mean to welcome to the show, and what does it mean to have your brain?
Thanks, Lori. It's great to be here. And I would say that, you know, the body is our brain, actually. And I think one of the wonderful things about Western Neo-Tantra and actually old, ancient Tantra is that the mind, body, spirit is all one. And in Western society, we've tended to separate those things off. Many of us live, above our throat chakra, sort of distinctive heads that kind of hang out there, and we're in our thinking, anxious brain all the time. We're breathing high up in our chest. We're just we're not embodied. And
right.
One of the wonderful things about the revival of Tantra in the West is that it is bringing together and reminding us of the bonds of body and mind and spirit. And lots of things are being developed out of that concept to help people bring all these parts together and increase those three elements, those three separate things, are much more than their sum. And when we can begin to work in those realms and work together with those things, we become more enlightened, more conscious, more aware, more present, more focused, and understanding of what's going on not only in ourselves, what's going on with our lover, our partner, our children, our co-workers, our community, you know, and the world at large. And it gives us a bigger set of tools to be in life with.
So it makes perfect sense to me. I'm not sure, I don't know if it makes perfect sense to everyone. I mean, I say that we're talking heads walking around and that our body just gets us from meeting to meeting, and we put nice things on it. You know, we put jewels on it and we put nice clothes on it, but mostly people are pretty separated, and we've been taught that since birth, that there's something, the spirit is more important than the body. And I certainly don't agree in that. And
one of the concepts in Tantra is that the temple, that their body is our temple. But when I talk about mind and brain, you know, one of the things I'm researching and working on a fourth book, which I would like to bring our mind more into the tantric sphere. You know, we've got the body and the spirit kind of covered, you know, and sacred sexuality and all the sexual spiritual practices that are embodied within Tantra. But bringing the mind in, to me, is recognizing what our body is doing, so that we can use that knowledge to enable our spirit and our body to work better together and to work better in the understanding in our relationships in the world. So for instance, if I understand that that when I get angry or get triggered, let's say, that anger is arising in me and that my amygdala and hippocampus sections of the midsections of the brain are going to start squirting cortisol, which is the anxiety, stress, neurohormone. And what that's going to do is it's going to increase my heartbeat. It could even send my heart into irregular heartbeats. I'm going to be breathing very shallow in my chest instead of deeply embodied in my belly and throughout my body cavity. And so what that's going to do is it's going to put me into a fight or flight kind of a stance, which then my brain is going to start then get, my higher brain is going to start going into the thinking mode on top of that, and it's going to help this spiral, a downward spiral really in a way, this spiral of negative thinking, negative self-talk, negative talk about the person that maybe triggered me, you know, whatever the issue is. And that all gets amplified to where I could be stuck in that mood for days on end. Whereas if I understand that trigger in my mind, I understand through the body-spirit practices of meditation, yoga, eye-gazing, even conscious touch with my partner, all those things that reduce the cortisol stress level, bring me back into relaxation and presence. If I understand that with my mind, I can immediately stop those triggers and go, oh, wait, if I just deep breathe, I relax, this is all going to pass within a minute, and I don't have to go into that negative cycle that is going to cause me hurt, not alone my partner, my relationships out there that I've interacted with, but it's going to cause me very negative.
Let me say something about this, too, because, I was a very angry person. I'm not anymore, but I had a huge slush fund of anger, and I didn't know where it came from.
Right.
Like, I just felt like I was born mad. I really don't know. I don't have any instance or memory of any kind of trespass or sexual trauma in my life where I was abused by a parent or, somebody, an adult or whatever. I don't have any. I have all the symptoms of somebody who is, or I had, let me just put it in the past. I had all the symptoms of somebody who was sexually traumatized, but I don't think I ever was. I tried to check on it, but I still, into my 50s, I was angry a lot until I learned Tantra. And when I learned Tantra, even the first time I ever did Osho dynamic meditation where I did breathing, you know that.
Oh, that's a fabulous exercise.
That nose thing, it goes. And then after the breathing, there's a lot of yelling. And then after the yelling, there's silence. After the first time I did that, I went, oh, yeah, this is for me, because that's the time that my mind was quiet and it was relieved probably for the first time of any anger that could have been just looming.
Yes, and your mind and body was quieted because of the actions your body was doing and the mind letting go.
Right, the mind let go because it was so chaotic. I went past my point of thinking, I can keep breathing like this. And I went past my point of thinking, I can keep yelling like this. I spontaneously started crying. I had a flashback about my mother, needing to speak to my mother who had been dead already a few years. And all this stuff came up, and I didn't try to understand it. I was past the point of understanding. I just went for the process, and when the process was over, there was an actual place where I could be quiet inside. But until that point, I couldn't sit down and meditate. No amount of sit down, be quiet meditation could get any cortisol to stop flowing through my veins and
right.
into my brain, you know?
And that's a feedback loop with our minds and our bodies starting from a young age. And, who knows, Lori, what started it, where you're, you know, is it past life? Is it, are you picking up generational stuff? You know, who knows? And we can try to suss that out as much as possible, but really when it comes down to it, there are practices, as you discovered, that can clean our system out. It's almost like, you know, a good couple of multi-orgasms, and you're just, you're like, oh, I am just clean. I'm clean. You know, and so there's something going on with the neurochemicals and neurotransmitters, you know, all that stuff that allows the body to come back to a stasis point and reset itself. And if we do those practices enough, and if we do them with mindfulness, you know, and awareness, we then reset the point. You know, we're living in fascinating times with the advent of the fMRI. We scientists in the last 6 or 7 years are discovering some phenomenal things, and they're understanding. You know, they can look at minute sections of the brain while thoughts are going on. You know, showing the client pictures, things like that. We are being able to suss out the minute details of what's going on in an emotional state, in a physical state, and we're just at the beginning of really huge discovery. And I think a lot of people are very interested in, you know, what is going on in my brain? What is going on in my body? Why? How do I, you know, what does dropping my shoulders and using my mind to visualize a beautiful scene that I can imagine, you know, what is that, where is that taking me to? What's going on so that I can understand, so that I can perpetuate that state, so I can come back to that state and do it again? There's fascinating stuff going on. And,
Just like when anger triggers the cortisol, is there something that a serene picture triggers? Is there a different chemical, or is it just the absence of cortisol?
Well, partially it's the absence of cortisol, but also, you know, it was fascinating at the Sedona conference to listen to where the latest wave, the newest breakthroughs that the Tantra community is going to, around really realizing that it's our childhood experiences, you know, taking man boys and taking them into manhood, and going back to that place of the, you know, really the nurtured baby. So much in Western society and modern society, our stress is related, I think, a lot to how we were raised as children. If the mom had to go to work and the father worked, who was the primary caregiver? What kind of quality care was that baby getting from the get-go? Because they're realizing that oxytocin, which is the bonding neurochemical, neurohormone, is what drives our relaxation states and what drives our bonding and connecting states. And so as a tiny baby born, if you're nursing, or even if the mother primary caregiver is holding the bottle, there's this intense eye gazing going on between the baby and the mother at all times. The mother's using expressions, the baby is just sucking up the information and eye gazing, watching the mother's minute and subtle little changes in her face, and the mother's watching the baby. So this is where we're learning how to relate to others, how to notice subtle changes in facial structure that give us the ability to minutely read, you know, when we become adults, minutely read the reactions we're having with our peers, with our business people, you know, with our lovers, whatever's going on. So the better you are as a baby at that, the better you are at sussing out the other person's level of, you know, where they're at the moment, and then modifying your behavior to bring them more into harmony, to bring in harmony. Oxytocin is expressed much more in women, although it is expressed in men. They used to think it was just orgasm. So that, you know, was for men, and then for women, orgasm, breastfeeding, and childbirth. they're now getting that it's happening during eye gazing, it's happening during certain kinds of touch, it's happening when we feel empathy. So this oxytocin is being expressed.
So oxytocin is really, it's the major connector.
It's the connector.
We're gonna pause for a moment, but we will, when we come back, we're gonna find out more about this. If you've just tuned in to Tantra Cafe, I'm Laurie Hamlisch, your host, and today my guest is the amazing Susie Hoyman. She is the president and CEO of LLL Media Group, and she's responsible for Tantra.com and Tantra.org, and she's well produced as a videographer and also as an author. And she's just been telling us about the brain, the chemicals in the brain that get triggered. And when we come back, we're going to continue with that. I have some very poignant questions for you, Susie. So stay tuned, everyone. Be right back.
Have you ever wished for an end to pests in and around your home, around your office? Stop paying for dangerous chemicals that can harm your children, your pets, and your clients. Today in Arizona and Florida, an environmentally responsible pest control company named Ladybug has set up shop to provide natural and organic pest control services. Ladybug can help you stop even the most persistent, nastiest bugs with green, organic products that are friendly to people and pets. In addition, there are franchise opportunities in Arizona, Florida, and throughout the USA. To learn more about Ladybug's home-friendly and earth-smart green pest control services, visit the Ladybug website at ladybugcorp.com or call us at 561-276-7600. Ladybug guarantees you another eco-friendly, pest-free day, naturally.
Wondering what book you should read to jumpstart your sex life and increase your happiness? Try my book, Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy by me, Laurie Handlers. This short, easy-to-read book will make you laugh at yourself, and it may possibly make you cry as you discover my tantric secrets for happiness and how they apply to you. In the book, I begin with the 10th law, make love in the unknown, and then I work you all the way through laws 1 through 9 to teach you how to be in the unknown, fresh, every moment of every day of your life. Sex and Happiness puts the innocence and love back into sex and gives Tantra the respect it deserves. It's only $19.99 in paperback and $14.99 ebook. Go to sexandhappiness.com to order your copy of Sex and Happiness by me, Laurie Handlers, the host of Tantra Cafe.
You're listening to Tantra Cafe, a program for spiritual enlightenment, and I'm Laurie Handlers. Today my guest is Susie Hoyman, and she has done amazing things in her life. She's produced instructional videos on the Kama Sutra, on Tantra, and on other sexual disciplines. She's co-produced 3 instructional videos. She's written 3 books on the subject, and her latest real passion is the neurobiology of the Western Tantra or Neo Tantra. So, Susie, where we left off, we were talking about oxytocin as being the connector, the bridge between people that starts with the mother and child.
Yes.
So if that doesn't happen, we talked about if that does happen, you get the cues from your mother, and then those are the cues that you read later on and as an adult. What if your mother was cold?
Well, I don't know that we should go in that direction because it's in varying degrees, but I believe we can re-childize ourselves. We can rebirth ourselves in a way with our lovers. We can increase, there's many ways we can increase our oxytocin, the amount of oxytocin we're producing in our body with our partner. And just as a side note, oxytocin is probably one of those things that they're talking about a female Viagra or a, probably we're going to be working in the oxytocin region someday. You can get precursor sprays now, but I believe that's one of the areas that's going to get examined because it actually can increase arousal too. So that's another whole story.
Yeah, that's a whole scary thing for me, but it scares me, like, who's making that and what they're using it for, but we should do another whole show on that.
Well, we could. Because I actually believe, because oxytocin is what causes the prostate and the uterus to actually pump, I believe that doing Kegels and being really good at your Kegels actually produces some oxytocin. So, but that's another whole story. So.
No, but that's great. Listen, I have everyone do that. And actually, the music for this show is my theme music. And it's because the reason it's by Jim McGrath. It's called Liquid Calm. The reason I use that music is that's the music that I teach people to do squeezing and Kegels with to increase the oxytocin. I tell them, listen, you can make yourself happy. All
yes.
you have to do is breathe and squeeze, and you're going to breathe anyway, so you might
yes.
as well squeeze.
And then when you get that feedback loop, maybe you practice that for a couple of weeks, that is entrained in your brain. You have trained your brain to connect those two things so that you can just do one of them later. You can just breathe. You can just do your Kegel pumps, and the same actions will happen because you've entrained those two nerve pathways. So, yes, we could talk for 10 hours here, I'm sure. So oxytocin is very important because what's happening, especially in like, so one of the big expressions for a couple is orgasm. But the thing about it is, it's dopamine and oxytocin are rising during the orgasmic response level pre-orgasm. So we're looking at arousal, and we're looking at the building of the energy, and you know that old arc where it's going uphill and uphill and uphill. In the tantric model, there's a pause, and then there's an increase again. So there's these series of little mountains that are being created that go higher and higher and higher. Now, if a man gets to the place where he's had, you know, five or six of these almost, he's in the orgasmic state, he's hanging out there, but he hasn't ejaculated, his dopamine levels, his excitement levels are really high, plus the oxytocin the bonding neurochemical is also really high.
What does dopamine do, though? What does dopamine do to the...
Well, dopamine is our desire and reward neurochemical. It's the other really big thing. It drives addicts. That's the cycle that addicts get into where they crave something and their dopamine level goes up when they get it. So they go back and crave and their dopamine level goes up again. And so, that's the extreme of it. But in like with, a couple that has been together for a while, maybe over 2 years where the romance stage has worn off and, you know, they're having to sort of reinvent the wheel for themselves to keep excited. It's the dopamine, excitement, dopamine reward cycle that is what they need to do. So like if they pick up the tantra practices, they get kind of excited because here's a whole new realm of things they get to explore as a couple, both individually and together. So that increases the dopamine level. It gets the excitement level going, and then there's the expectation of a reward from that. So that's the cycle that needs to be kept going in a couple that's been together for a while.
Where the familiarity has bred perhaps contempt or just
normalcy.
Yeah, just normalcy, couch potato-ness, non-desire, not so
right.
much desire, nothing new. Nothing
right.
new going on.
Exactly. So the couple can reinvent themselves by creating new things for themselves, a little bit of edge, a little bit of excitement because they're learning something together. And then if it's the tantric practices, they're increasing their oxytocin and their bonding chemicals too, because it's these practices where the couple's, you know, working together and they're sexual. And so there's this whole upwelling of the good neurochemicals. I shouldn't really call them good, but you understand what I'm saying.
The ones that we desire.
Yes.
The ones that have a positive effect on the body rather than one that says go to war.
Exactly. And
but, you know, I read Joseph Chilton Pierce's book, The Biology of Transformation, and he said in that book that we could almost do no other, that we've got to maintain these meditative practices and keep focusing on the heart, because even when we know better, the brain, the reptilian brain, the part of the brain that's in the fight or flight, feels threatened all the time. That I call that the ego part of the brain. That wants to fight anyway. So when you say we're retraining, is it as powerful? Can it overcome this reptilian part of the brain?
Yes, Yes, for a bunch of reasons, but primarily, you know, when we talk about the cortisol and anxiety and the fight or flight tendency, there's another part to that that's not often mentioned. Women express quite a bit more oxytocin in different situations than men do. And so what happens is they go to tend and mend because of the oxytocin in them, because of the child rearing and the, you know, just they have, their body brain has many more ways it can express oxytocin because of the nature of women's work in the world, let's say, especially a couple hundred years ago and in, into ancient history. So what happens is they're going towards tending and mending their relationships that feel broken instead of fight or flight. And, that is the region that, you know, that everyone can work in, both men and women, to increase the amount of oxytocin, increase the way of, you know, claiming something that, you know, oh, I'm sorry, and then going to tending and mending rather than fighting and flight. And that can help a couple, of course, smooth over differences and get back into sync with themselves. Let's go back to that, the orgasm thing there that we were talking about. So men have risen, you know, they've had a couple of peaks, they're feeling really good. If they don't ejaculate, they hold on to that dopamine and oxytocin. I mean, the oxytocin's going to sort of stay there anyway, but the dopamine levels are going to stay high. And what dopamine does is it increases our awareness. It almost takes the blinders off, so that we're aware of more in our environment. We're pumped up. We're much more alive, and that can be sustained for a period of time. For women, if she's raising and having she's actually having some orgasms, because women don't. This is getting into tough territory. They don't quite ejaculate like women do, like men do, though some women do ejaculate. It's a different sensation, it's a different essence, and it doesn't tend to pull their dopamine levels down as far as it does for men. When the dopamine and serotonin levels get off, then serotonin rises, especially in men that ejaculate, and that puts them to sleep. It puts them into relaxation mode along with prolactin. And women tend to not have such sharp decreases and increases. They tend to stay a little bit more steady in their dopamine serotonin expression. And
yeah,
so
they've likened women's orgasm to women getting up after having sex and orgasm, wanting to clean the house and do all kinds of chores and
things. Right. It energizes them. They tend to keep their dopamine longer than men do.
Right. And men want to go to sleep. They're like, okay, this is why Tantra has become, well, it's one of the reasons I think Tantra has become so popular, that men want to last longer and they don't want to lose their vital life force. Or at least maybe when they come to Tantra, they think they're just going to have better sex and they don't really know what it involves. But then
They start getting it.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. They do. We're gonna pause here again for a second. I want to mention that Susie said earlier in the show that we were at this conference in Sedona, and I recommend you visit the website schooloftemplearts.com. The International School of Temple Arts was founded by Baba Des Nichols, and he's developing conferences and trainings worldwide, along with a consortium of practitioners and sex educators who cooperate to bring a shift in consciousness across the continents, the cultures, the mores, and the history around the world. And that's where Susie and I met. We met at, although we've been in communication for a long time.
For many years, yes.
Yeah, many years, but we actually met face-to-face at a conference in Sedona from this International School of Temple Arts. So I recommend that you check out this website if you want to find out what's going on all over the world. schooloftemplearts.com.
They are doing a phenomenal job. I was very impressed.
I was too. I was beautifully surprised, impressed, happy, all the people that I met there. It was
And by the way, I was really impressed with you. I am so glad we finally met. Boy, that workshop you gave was fantastic.
Thank you. I'm working on releasing the cortisol.
Yes. And making room for the oxytocin.
Anyway, we're going to pause here for a second. We'll be right back. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Tantra Cafe, a program for spiritual enlightenment. I'm Laurie Handlers, your host, and you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook. You just have to type in Laurie Handlers or Tantra Cafe. When we come back, we'll be talking to my guest, Susie Hoyman, more about the effects on the body and effects on the brain on when you're orgasming or when you're exercising ejaculation choice. We're talking about some really important things and how they affect the brain and how the brain affects the body, etc. So we're talking about this whole biological piece. So please stay tuned. Are you stuck in an area of your life? For example, having challenging or negative relationships? Are you feeling unfulfilled? Perhaps you're experiencing a lack of energy or possibly even tension in your body. I feel you need to call Kate Holt. Kate Holt is a core energetics practitioner. Whether you work with Kate in a group or in a private session, you'll feel like you're coming home to yourself. You'll become more comfortable in your own skin. You'll discover your unique gifts and be supported to bring them fully into the world. You'll be empowered to create the life you want and have more pleasure and fulfillment. Don't waste another minute feeling stuck. Really. Call 856-261-4900 for a consultation or visit www.kateholt.info. That's kateholt.info. Well, we're back with Tantra Cafe, and I'm Laurie Handlers, your host. And I'm talking with Susie Hoyman, and Susie is an amazing authority on neurobiology in the brain and what happens with the practices of Western Tantra. And you can find more about Susie at tantra.com or at tantra.org. She's held these websites since 1995, her websites have been the hub of Tantra for quite some time. Anyone who wants to know anything about Tantra just goes there. So, Susie, we were talking before the break on why you'd want to store up some dopamine and why you'd want to store up some oxytocin. How do endorphins fit in with this? You mentioned serotonin and how men get a dip and then they want to go to sleep right after ejaculation. How about endorphins? Where do they play in? Because I know.
Well, endorphins are a big part of the up cycle. The dopamine, oxytocin, endorphins are opiates, and they get us going. They our brain works better on endorphins. Everything's kind of heightened, you know, alongside of the dopamine. So they're and endorphins are increased also during novelty, I would say. So that dopamine endorphin reward cycle where you've got a novel new thing you're doing as a couple that's maybe been together for a while, and you're doing it, and it's peaking these neurohormones, and you expect a reward at the end of some sort. So if you don't step too much over the edge and really choose a giant novelty, you know, but you ease your way in to different novel situations with your lover, you're going to really manage the increase in excitement in your relationship that's a very manageable kind of a level that will keep these neurochemicals floating around in your body. And when you bring awareness to that, there's this whole new level of understanding about, I can suggest that we play this game tonight, you know, it's a Saturday night and we were going to maybe do a little sexual game or maybe we were going to create a tantric ritual for ourselves for 2 or 3 hours and set a completely different mood to our lovemaking and practice some of the things that, you know, you can find on tantra.com or different tantra sites or you've learned from a tantra teacher. So you're keeping the oxytocin and the dopamine and the endorphins flowing and you're you are literally creating brain entrainment. Our brains are very plastic, they're discovering. Brain entrainment that keeps the excitement level going and keeps the awareness of that cycle going. And that's the kind of thing that, you know, that there's a lot of research being done on longtime Buddhist meditators. The Dalai Lama's been involved in quite a bit of it, in fact. And their understanding now is getting very profound about what meditation or meditative type ways of being are, do to your brain. It increases exponentially the size of the neocortex, the outer covering of the brain. That's our higher functioning brain, where we our executive functioning, where we can, you know, we can control ourselves. Make better choices, understand situations better, things like that. And so not only is it growing that area, it is allowing meditators and people that go into deep relaxation, it allows them to have better function over their body and their mind. And
you know,
that allows...
I'm into physical immortality, like actually staying here, not going out of the body, not the spirit leaving the body, not dying.
Actually, it's slowing the aging process also. So they're discovering all these things about relaxation, meditation, and how they can help us not only have sharper minds, but they can help us be more present, more focused. They're finding out all kinds of things about focused awareness. When we focus our mind, how the neural connections are working, and how it's exponentially better for us to be calm and to be focused.
Are you linking this meditative state to the orgasmic state? Is there a link here?
Yes. Because when you're relaxed and you're in a more meditative state, you're moving closer to the theta wave state. And theta waves allow our emotional memories to become more consolidated. So in a good feedback loop, if you are experiencing these states where you're aroused, but you're completely relaxed, you're mind isn't working, you're in an almost meditative state with your lover, your partner, and you're having fun, and it's a very relaxed state, you're moving closer to the theta wave state, which is consolidating this emotion that you're having into your memory, and so the feedback loop grows, and you become more like that if you practice this way of being more. And then you can draw on that in your stressful situations during life, and calm yourself faster and connect yourself back with your, you know, in your spirit and brain and body, you get whole again.
So can people do this? I mean, you're talking about lovers, and, you know, if you have a lover or if you're in a couple, but I feel people who are single can do this also. I mean, they can do it with self-pleasure. They can bring themselves to various peaks, and they can train themselves to have bigger, wider, deeper, more relaxing, plus more exciting orgasms. So I don't want to cross
absolutely
that.
No, yeah. Absolutely. And in fact, the training starts with ourselves. Ultimately, it is with ourselves, and all of these things are solo practices. Absolutely, bringing to bear our mind. We can even, it's fantastic, even if you're partnered, to eye gaze with yourself in the mirror. Sit and breathe and meditate for a few minutes and then be in front of a big mirror and eye gaze with yourself for 5 minutes. It is phenomenal. So I suggest that people even that are in couples practice by themselves. Absolutely.
Now with eye gazing, I just want to let people know that I usually recommend, and I don't know if you do, but I usually recommend that people look at the left eye. So when you're eye gazing, if you were eye gazing with yourself in the mirror, you'd have to be looking at the left eye wouldn't be the it would be a different eye. Like I just trying to figure that out. if I was eye gazing with you, I would look at your left eye. But if I'm eye gazing with myself in the mirror, I would look at my left eye, which is
in the mirror.
It's a different. It's in a different.
It would be
place.
The right eye.
Yeah.
I don't worry so much about that. The left is the receptive, both on the body and the eye and the hand. The right is the more active side.
Right.
What I like to tell people to do is actually circle it. When you breathe out and look at the left eye, say there's two people involved, not the mirror.
Right.
You breathe out to the left eye. You breathe in from their left eye, which is on your right side. So you actually circle. You create a circle pattern of receiving and giving and receiving and giving. And that can be done in the mirror. Just don't worry about what eye it is. And, you know,
okay.
And circle it. So that's an effective practice.
I just wondered, you know, I haven't done that practice, I don't think. I also see, there's also something else about the serotonin. I'm looking at some notes that you sent me, and it talks about ecstasy, MDMA. Does our bodies produces that? Do our bodies produce MDMA?
Actually, I had that in my notes because I had some friends who just got back from the first ever, the MAPS conference in San Jose a couple of weeks ago. And the U.S. and other countries are starting to open up actual funded research for many of these things to be used for PTSD and anxiety and stress and anxiety around dying, people that are terminally ill and different things. And there's a new study that came out. I forget the man's name. It starts with a P. He's Italian, who studied ecstasy. And the reason I've noted this is that because serotonin, you know, on ecstasy, it's not such a great lovemaking sacred medicine because you're already there. You're already in love with everything. So
right.
It tends to cut off arousal in a sexual sense in the body, and you're just sort of there in aha, in sort of a heavenly state already. What they're noticing is that state is a high serotonin peak. So if you look at the transgression of, say, a six-hour ecstasy journey, serotonin peaks in the middle of the journey, goes very high, and then subtly starts dropping off. What happens for men when they ejaculate is that serotonin starts peaking very high in relationship to dopamine, that relaxation state, that sort of, I just want to relax and go into the all of it, you know, the all with a capital A, that is the same. They're noticing the same kind of peak, only it spikes faster in men, you know, when they ejaculate, when they've had an orgasm. So that was that note.
I see.
It's the same sort of feeling state, only exaggerated in an ecstasy journey.
I see. I wondered if my body could produce that.
Well, you know, none of these drugs, none of these sacred medicines, no drug would work in us if we didn't produce a similar it or a similar thing in our brains and bodies anyway. They wouldn't work.
So we could recognize it. We could put some substance in our body, and then we wouldn't be able to recognize it because it would seem foreign if it wasn't being already.
And it wouldn't work on us. It wouldn't it wouldn't sit in any of the receptor sites on our neurons. And when we talk about an ecstasy state, you know, we can get there in many different ways. Exercise, breath work, meditation, tantric sex, multiple orgasms. There are many pathways. You know, I can even feel ecstasy when I notice, when I'm, you know that sort of overwhelming flooding feeling when you watch a small child in that's really happy, or you have empathy for someone and you get a flood of warmth through you. To me, that is a shot of ecstasy going through my body. Mm. I am one with that person. I am one with the emotion. And you know, I correlate those two things as being, you know, the same state. So that ecstatic state that you can enter into with, say, your lover, or through solo breath practices and breath sexual practices, orgasmic states, you enter that state and you learn how to hang out in that state for longer periods of time, and that is, and then become aware in that state of ecstasy and actually witness yourself in that state. And that's where I believe we get into training our brain to get conscious, because it's hard in those, it's hard in those ecstatic states to get conscious about it. We just kind of want to go with it and just be in it, and, you know, and that's
float away into the universe.
Exactly. But if we become aware in that state and begin to gently witness ourselves in it, that's when we begin to make profound movement to help facilitate our own rapid self-growth.
Yes. Well, we're gonna pause there for a moment. If you've just tuned in, you are listening to Tantra Cafe. I'm Laurie Handlers, your host, and today my guest is Susie Hoyman, who is really telling us a lot about what happens in the body, what happens in the brain, what happens in the chemical reactions in the brain when we're training ourselves to do Western Tantra. We were just talking about the high effect or the peak effect when we have dopamine, endorphins, and we have oxytocin, and we get this ecstatic state. When we come back, I'm going to be talking to her about the vagus nerve, what that is, why it's so important. The vagus nerve is an amazing piece of the body. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Many times on Tantra Cafe, you've heard my guests and me discuss emotional release techniques. Now you can do emotional release work in the privacy of your own home. In my CD, Shamanic Release and Lottie Han, I create a very, very safe and sacred space in which you can do the powerful work I'm known for in my Tantra courses. First, I set you up with the proper positioning and breathing, and then I guide you through emotional states to the beat of tribal African rhythms. Try this CD as an easy way to do your personal clearing work on a regular basis and watch your relationships walk free from emotional baggage. You can order my CD at butterflyworkshops.com for only $20. I believe you're worth it. I hope you do. Go to butterflyworkshops.com and get your copy now. And walk free from emotional baggage.
We're back with Tantra Cafe, and my guest today is Susie Hoyman. And Susie, you were telling us a lot of things about the natural state of the body and things that the body does and things that the body can create or be trained to do. And that's really the operative word here, that we can, through practices of Tantra and other meditative forms, we can train ourselves to be in a bliss state or an ecstasy state most of the time. We have a choice. And
yes, we have big choices.
Both you and I can't stress that enough. That's why this has been such a fascinating subject. What about the vagus nerve? I know it's the biggest nerve in the body, I understand, and it shoots lots of signals to the brain. What do we need to learn about the vagus nerve?
Well, I got very curious about the vagus nerve, wondering about the chakra system and the vagus nerve, and I've been a follower of Dr. Beverly Whipple for years. She was the original, along with Dr. Perry, John Perry, the original 1970s book on the G-spot that was so famous, and she's a fascinating woman, and she's still doing research at Rutgers, and she's researching with women who have complete spinal breaks, which means they're either quadriplegic or paraplegic, and she's taking these women and actually is producing deep vaginal orgasms in them. And, you know, these women are just, like, completely in gratitude for this, that they can feel something in their body. And the reason they can is the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve does not run in the spinal column like most of our nerves. There's a set of actually 11 ancient nerve, 13 ancient nerve pathways that come from our reptilian brain, our ancient brain, the lower brain stem, and they go out from under the skull at the back of the neck, and they travel through the body. The vagus nerve is the 10th is number 10, and it is a huge nerve. This nerve breaks off into two central branches, and one innervates the top part of the body, and one some of the lower areas. This nerve has points that touch to the back of the throat, to the voice box, our fifth chakra here at the throat. It goes to both lungs. It goes to the heart. It goes to many of our internal organs. It goes to several places in the gut and intestinal system and stomach. And then if you look it up on Wikipedia, mostly the descriptions stop there. But it turns out Wikipedia isn't accurate. And the new research that Beverly's doing and many other researchers now is showing that the vagus nerve also touches the uterus, the vagina, they believe, actually, but the uterus and the cervix. And those are organs that are deep inside the woman, at the end of the vaginal canal. And they also, now there's speculation that's probably pretty strong, that it innervates the prostate gland also. So what's happening with the vagus nerve is that it's not involved in the spinal column. So these women can actually have deep vagal nerve, orgasms, not via the spinal cord, which is broken in them. And so there's a lot of new research going on. And one of the things that I find interesting about the vagus nerve, years ago when I was studying with Charles and Caroline, we were also filming with them. And one night we were filming Caroline. She didn't always want to, in first level classes, be demonstrating G-spot work and actual female ejaculation. So we came in, we filmed with them. This was in the late 80s. We filmed with them and so that they have a video to show instead of her sort of quote unquote performing. And that night, Michael and I went back to our room and we were making love, and I said, Caroline was making these very odd noises, and I'm going to make those noises right now. Literally, she was mentoring me. So I was in a high state of arousal, and I opened my mouth and I emanated these deep resonating sounds that Caroline was making, kind of like, instead of the typical we see in pornography and stuff, if you try that yourself, you hear that the comes from the throat up to our head.
Right.
But if you try a deep sound, the whole body cavity resonates. It vibrates. And I believe that that is vibrating the vagus nerve. Because
we just have to say who Charles and Caroline are, because you and I know who they are, but not everyone knows who they are. So who Susie's referring to is Charles Muir and Caroline Muir. They were probably the most significant, and still are in their own right, the most significant bringers of Tantra, the deliverers of Tantra to the Western world.
Right.
They have more to do with most people getting educated about Tantra.
Right.
Than
early teachers, great teachers. So,
yeah.
So when you look at the chakra system, you're innervating the first chakra, the second chakra, the gut, the third chakra, the heart chakra, the fifth chakra, the throat chakra, and very potentially the pineal gland. Well, so to me, I'm fascinated by the vagus nerve, because by opening the mouth, vibrating the internal organs and of the body, and moving that energy, and let's say maybe you're being stimulated, let's take a woman for example, she's stimulated by having intercourse or having her G-spot done, or deep vaginal penetration to get that tip of the vagus nerve down at the cervix and uterus, then her uterus goes into contraction, and then she's moving that energy when she opens her mouth. So, to me, the vagus nerve is just, we're at the beginning, at the tip of understanding what the potential is for expanding and delivering multiple expanded orgasms.
See, I understand from that research that I heard that a person could be almost completely numb throughout their whole body with a spinal cord break, but that if they had one piece of skin the size of a dime or the size of a quarter on their body, and that skin could be stimulated erotically, like through blowing on it or licking or caressing that one little area left on the body that had some sensation, that women could be brought into deep orgasm also. And that's also because of the vagus nerve and how the vagus nerve like spans out along every area that you've just mentioned.
They say that actually at the location along the spine where the spinal break or the spinal, problem occurred, that very often on one side or the other of the spine, in a very located area, that area will regenerate nerves. And if the lover, what they say is if you get the right kind of touch from the right kind of person at the right time in that break area, you can train that area to actually produce orgasms for you. And I actually believe, these guys are experimenting in fMRI machines with women who can think off, who can think orgasm, and they're noticing that the same thing's happening. The same brain regions are firing as when they have a genitally focused orgasm. So we are all capable of training our brain, body, minds to have orgasms by just thinking about it if we've done the right kind of connecting and entrainment of our nerves to produce that.
Well, Susie, this is most fascinating. And, I really thank you today for coming on the show and being my guest, because this adds all the more fuel to the fire for why people ought to be looking at Tantra as an alternative for themselves, not only if their relationship is stale, but because they're being proactive in anti-aging and increasing the production of all these wonderful chemicals for the brain. I mean, you've done an incredible job today of showing us how we can produce peaceful, loving, ecstatic, amazing chemicals in our body by training ourselves in
fun ways, in really fun ways.
Fun ways, yeah, orgasmic ways.
Yes. It's amazing, Lori.
So I thank you so much for being on today. I'm going to let people know how they can get in touch with you. You can reach Susie Hoyman at tantra.com or at tantra.org. And I'm going to say your blog here because that people might want to check that out too. Susie's got a blog at huffingtonpost.com.
Yes.
And you just make a slash and then it's Susie, S-U-Z-I-E, hyphen, Hoyman, H-E-U-M-A-N-N. And so you can find her blog. You can find out a lot of more information. Susie, thanks so much for being here.
You're welcome. It was really fun, Lori. It was a good conversation.
Really fun. And please stay tuned for my next show. My next show is going to be about healing the world from the bedroom. And there'll be a lot of excitement there. So please stay tuned. Again, you can find me at Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. You can write to me, Lori@tantracafe.com. And this has been an incredible show. Thank you all so much. I'm saying namaste from Tantra Cafe.